we'll pull in some of the guys that are out there doing some stuff. And we'll make sure that you get updated on what we're doing here. Because keep in mind, Freedoms Phoenix is an activist center. I mean, we're busy. We're active. And a lot of times what we want to accomplish is, like yesterday, we started up the show yesterday. Some of the guys came across some new material that we use for putting the signs on. Keep in mind, you know, you do like a coroplast, the big corrugated plastic that's like, you know, plastic cardboard. You know, you have these signs on, these political signs that you see around during election campaigns. All that stuff is, how much it costs is anywhere from, oh man, you can get them as low if you buy in heavy bulk, and so maybe $7 a sheet to as much as $30 a sheet. And that's without anything on it. Then you got to print it or silk screen it or whatever. Then we make different methods that we do. We can do stencils. We can spray paint. We can do it by hand. We can do screening. You know, you can even get some guys that work at a big print shop that have a whatever, and they kind of, you know, the boss are like, okay, well, you can do whatever, pay for the ink, and you can kind of just get it printed on. Because a lot of these full color, really cool coroplast, now it's like a big giant inkjet printer, and you just run a 4x8 sheet of coroplast through it, and it comes out printed like the picture on it. I mean, you can get all kinds of funky with that, but it's expensive. So it could be, as you know, dollars and dollars a square foot. So, but if you get it down for cost, I mean, you might be able to get it for $20. But that's still $20 a sign. You multiply that times 100, how much is that? It's like a lot of money, you know? So it is how can we do this stuff and compete with the man? The man, you know, who's the man? I don't know. It's them, they, those, you know, the ones that won't leave us alone. We just want to be left alone. They just won't leave us alone. Those guys, all right? They're always advocating for taking more of your stuff. Well, how do you get to say no? I mean, what do you got to do? Violence? You know, I try to think, you know, under what circumstances can I think that any kind of violent resistance would be to our advantage? I mean, you know, there's times that you want to live to fight another day, another way. I mean, you want to, I mean, it's not cowardice, you know, it's not, I mean, well, yeah, it probably has a lot to do with it. I'd rather keep breathing in and out, but, you know, and I'd rather not go in a cage. But a lot of times, if you're smart, you can be more creative in your resistance. Give you a good example. There was a, I don't tell this story often. I'll go ahead and tell this story. It's a good story. There was a gentleman, his name was Barry Graham, and he's from Scotland. So he always says his name is Barry Graham. And I'm Barry Graham, what? What's your name? Barry Graham, what? Okay, spell that for me. Okay, Barry Graham, okay? Barry Graham, you know, if I should look him up. You know, he was an author that came here from Scotland, and he toured America, and he was just like, it's the greatest thing in the world, okay? And, yeah, I'm typing in, you know, see where he's at. I haven't thought about him for a long time. Barry Graham used to work for the New Times here in Arizona, and how he got the job was he was a author of a book about how great and wonderful America was. And what he did is he came to the attention of a lot of people that, yeah, you know, hey, man, he loved America, and he's a good writer, and he has a different, fresh perspective on politics and things from being from Scotland. So, you know, he had his own column here, and it was popular. And then there was a man that shot a Maricopa County supervisor in the butt, went into the supervisor meeting. They had a meeting, you know, the supervisor there having her, whatever the heck it was, and just went over the gun, walked up, she's, oh, runs away, boom, shot her in the butt. Now, I don't know if he was aiming for the butt. I think he was. The reason was that they had done a taxpayer-funded baseball stadium for the Diamondbacks. There was enormous amounts of corruption around it and so on, and I had lawsuits on, and we were out and, you know, all this kind of stuff and everything. Now they would blame me for him shooting them just because we brought the issue up. You know, it's like Obama thing. Yeah, you know, you're causing this political dissent. You're causing people to be, you know, against their government. You just by bringing up these issues and causing it, that's a crime. That's a hate crime for making people hate or something. I mean, this is where this is going. I mean, I could see, you know, what was coming from back in the day. Well, what happened was you have a politician getting shot in the butt. Here is a guy from Britain that left Scotland, the British Empire there. He left Scotland right at the time in the mid-90s when the movie Braveheart came out. Braveheart gave such a nationalistic kind of, we want our own parliament, and we've been invaded in Longshanks and the evil empire of, and blah, 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 blah. That's how Scotland got their own parliament again. Or I don't know if they ever even had it before. So they get their own kind of, you know, they get to have a subset of the farm. You know, they get the bigger farm, and they go, okay, well, we'll get to have a little subset of the farm, and we get overseers that will, you know, make us feel like we're semi-free or something. Okay, it's just a game they play. So they do that, and during that time, you know, there were people being shot in the butt. You know, there's little bombs going off. You got Ireland in uproar. You got all this kind of stuff. He comes to America. Man, America, they're peaceful. America, you know, they resolve their differences at the ballot box. America is great. I love America. Less than half a mile from where he was at the newspaper that he worked at, I mean, just right down the street, you know, I mean, it could have been, you know, like two driver shots, okay? And you go half a mile, less than half a mile down the street, all of a sudden, boom, a politician's getting shot in the butt. He's like, what the heck was that? So he's asking his editors and so on. Now, he had just gotten there. I had already, you know, and, you know, I was kind of towards the late 90s. I guess it was 98 or something about then. And he's asking them, and he knows somebody. He knows people know. I mean, you just don't have guys. I don't care how crazy they are. You just don't go shooting people in the butt just for the heck of it. And that was the standard line. That was what everybody was supposed to say. He's crazy. He's just crazy. Yeah, he said something about baseball staying crazy. He doesn't like baseball. He'd rather be hockey. You know, whatever. You know, it was crazy. But yeah, but he had a reason. He's crazy. That's it. That's all you ever hear from anybody dissent and so on. Certainly when they do violence, crazy. So he kept pressing. Finally, one of his editors that I had worked with that knew what was going on. He'd go to the court hearings and everything, and I'd tell him what was going to happen, who was going to do what, and he would sit and wait for the judge. You know, he knew, but he also knew what his job was. His job was to be the, you know, the king's jester and do whatever the heck he said, okay? But he knew. So he out of the side of his mouth one time, he goes, and he talked to Ernest Hancock. What? Who? What? I never said nothing. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, but so, and Barry made that point to me. He called my home. My kids gave him the number where I was, you know, visiting some friends. I'm 2 hours on a Sunday afternoon, excused myself, and went in there because he had to have deadline for this story. It was a big thing. And so on. He's doing, I'm going to help this guy from Scotland out and explain everything to him from the beginning of who played what role, why, all the court stuff. I'm calling, you know, my kids on the other phone saying, you know, go get the number, the lawsuit number on that. It's in my drawer, and you know, with that, you know, I'm getting them all the stuff there. Go. He goes, oh, well, this is the same crap that I've been dealing with back in Scotland. This is the same thing, and it produces the same result: violence. And he asked me what I thought about this guy, and the money quote that he put in, and you know, story and everything for me. I go, look, these guys are just mind canaries. They're just a side effect. They're just the signs of what's to come. They're the ones that aren't creative enough. They're the ones that haven't thought it through enough. They're the ones that either for some other reason they either are crazy or they haven't thought it through or I don't know. That's not the way I choose to do it. Because I can see when it gets this bad, you can expect this kind of violence and stuff to happen. In fact, oftentimes it's the government that needs it to distract from what the real issue is. You know, you got a big, giant whole country going up against something. They got to distract you. You know, they got the, you know, the wholeness over here. They got the, you know, anti-pro, whatever, neo-Nazi, KKK, Ku Klux Klan preschool, you know, loving kid going, doing, molesting whatever people, you know. I mean, you know, anarchists, dreadlocking, you know, hippie dope smokers. I mean, you know, with guns. I mean, they got to come up with something to do this. There's always the mine canaries. The canaries they took in the mine. And when they've keeled over, you knew the air was bad. Get out of the mine. Well, there's mine canaries starting to drop all over this country. But you're not hearing about it. We'll talk about it when we come back.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Who are they to lecture me?
Commodus, the Senate has its uses.
What uses? All they do is talk. It should be just you and me and Rome.
Don't even think it. There's always been a Senate.
Rome has changed. It takes an emperor to rule an empire.
Of course, but leave the people there.
Illusions.
Traditions.
Leave the people their illusions. We'll call them traditions. See, that's one thing. At the movie The Gladiator, it was very clear what was going on there. There was a consolidation of power, as there always is, and there's threats to that power, be it from foreign, domestic, whatever. It's always an idea that is the biggest threat. You have to take away those ideas and replace them with, fear. Replace it with distraction. Replace it with cleavage and, you know, who wears short shorts or something. I mean, I don't know how you can. Your reality sooner or later comes and slaps you upside the head. And, oh, my goodness, you know, I'm wondering where my next meal's coming from. So what motivates people to act? And what actions can they take? And those actions have reactions by other people, certainly that don't benefit from you acting. So I'll give you an example. As you have people that would act out violently, that they would actually do so, because it's because they are, a good example is occupations of foreign governments and so on, you're occupied, that breeds suicide bombing. That was, you know, the book Dying to Win. You know, Dr. Paul made a big deal out of that during the 2008 campaign. And I remember we did the interview with the gentleman when I was producing for Charles Goyette. I can't remember the guy's name. Maybe it was Chalmers Johnson. I can't remember. Anyway, it doesn't matter. There was the book Dying to Win. It was all about, why do you have suicide bombers? Well, it's because they're Muslim extremists, and because you got some imam saying blah, 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 and because, you know, they're 14-year-olds that, you know, wear towels on their heads, and they like running around and blowing themselves up because, you know, you have no idea. I mean, nobody even really, you would think that they would, you know, talk about it on the evening news a little bit about why some kid would go out and blow himself up. I mean, you know, what was the circumstances? I mean, how many of his family members were blown to smithereens in front of him? I mean, you know what? There had to be something. Well, there was. Most of the suicide bombers come from, I think it was a Sri Lanka, and they're not even Islamic. So I'm gone, you know, or it was, whatever, it's in Indonesia there somewhere. And that was the point he was making. He's going, look, this where they're doing this, they're not even Islamic. There's one common thread. It was occupation. Whenever you are occupied, whenever you get the impression that you have the slaves are all your friends and neighbors, and anybody that even resists or even brings up the fact that, you know, like being a slave, boom, they disappear, get killed. You know, at a certain time, you start to feel this desperation that you have no options, and, you know, let's strap on and give me the trigger. So when you start seeing the mine canaries in this country start to go, when they start acting out violently, they start doing stuff, they start something, well, there's a reason. A lot of times I think that they're not exhausting all their other more effective methods of doing something. You know, they're not taking advantage of the ability to go out and communicate with others in other ways, but a lot of times they can't. I mean, they just don't have the verbal skills. They, you know, they got, you know, big growth on the side of their face and nobody will listen to them or something, or they, you know, talk funny or something. I mean, you know, I'm not the best in the world at this either. But the thing is that, you know, because I have the ability to talk to you and do a lot of things here at Freedom's Phoenix Workshop, and I've been an experienced activist and so on, violence is way down on my list. I mean, it's not even on my list. I mean, I may react, you know, instantaneously in the desire to keep breathing out when somebody's trying to stop me from breathing in and out, or my loved ones or friends or something. I can see that happen. But, you know, like today, I had this morning off. Jets doing the morning show. I got time to, go on the Freedom Fest this weekend. I get some stuff ready. I need to go up there. We're going to be, you know, passing out some goodies, and I'm meeting with some people, and there's, you know, little meetings of so-and-so, and maybe I might go see Predator this weekend. Yeah, I might have to wait. You know, one of my sons is going with me, he and his wife, but my other son is like, oh, heck no. You know, we're all seeing that together. Yeah, it's been a Predator thing since they were little kids, you know. But so we'll, you know, hold off on that. But, I mean, I'll go out and join myself, do so. I got stuff I got to do. Get my hair cut. I went to a, you know, a plastic surgeon friend of mine. I said, here, get this brown thing off my forehead. You know, God knows what kind of growth that's going to turn into. What I guess so I got a little dot on my forehead. So I go, okay, so I'm getting some stuff done. Oh, what else can I do? You know, there's a Cabela's, a sporting good place right by, you know, where the doctor is. I got some time to kill before I meet my daughter for lunch. I'm going to go ahead. I'm going to go in and go shopping. Well, what do I want? I want to be able to defend myself. Have a sight. Now, it's I don't need a permit. I never would get a permit. And so on. I carried my firearm with me. It's in my bag. Or I have ones, you know, stashed around various different places where I go, in my car, here at the shop, you know, at home, whatever. You know, there's something around somewhere. But oftentimes, unless I'm making a point or going to an event or something like that, I rarely have one on me, you know, on my physical person. I don't like that. I like to have it. You know, it's like I carry a little knife. I kind of got in the habit of one of those little knives just keeping, you know, clipped on in my pocket and so on. And the biggest reason is whenever I'm not with it, there's always some box or something I need to open. They're cheap ones. I mean, I get the, you know, $2 things at gun show or something like that. Put it in my pocket. I just pull that bad boy out. Ha ha! I got a knife. Now, it might come in handy dandy, save my butt. Here comes a dog. Here comes a bad guy or something. I may, you know, I have a knife, better not. Okay? Because it's not going to just jump out and stab somebody sitting in my pocket, so I'm good. And it's like, yeah, a 4-inch blade or something. So what happened? But it's sharp, and they're nice ones. So I go, okay, so I'm good there. But I really would feel better if I had a firearm that didn't, it wasn't bulky. I mean, I wear like cargo pants a lot, you know, like shorts, especially in the summer and so on. And, you know, and you got Dockers, you know, in the summer, jeans or something, you know, what can you carry? And you don't really want to, you know, just, you know, make anybody, you know, nervous or come to their attention. Let me tell you who's invisible. Middle-aged, chubby, bald, and white boys. Invisible. You can go to the mall, nobody ever even see you. You know, it's just like, you know, I don't know what they're looking at, but they're definitely not looking at you. So I can just be background kind of, you know, nobody pay attention to me guy. I'm good. You know, I'm good with that. I just watch the world go around. But something happens, and there has. There has been times. And one time we were in a movie theater. I remember we were watching Mission Impossible 2. It was the one that kind of sucked. And we were sitting there watching it, and all of a sudden, me and my friend sitting there, and we both had firearms. We just, you know, he's kind of guy, and we just, yeah, we're, you know, we're going to have a firearm. And he was carrying concealed, and I think I have mine under my jacket or something. We go to the movies. Right behind us were two Hispanic guys, and I think they were with a girl. And for something, it was, ouch, quit it, your mama, and whatever. And they're standing up. They actually started a fist fight, like three rows behind us and over about four or five seats. And it was during a fight scene towards the end of Mission Impossible 2. So we're looking back behind us, and I'm like, you know, hey, man, fight. And then they kind of, you know, then they just started, you know, chest out your mama, you're backing off a little bit. Hey, you're losing my attention. You know, it was more of a better fight scene up on screen. You know, I'm watching the movie again. I'm in the movie. And then all of a sudden it flares up again. I'm like, whoa, wait a minute. They got my attention again. I look back over here. So I got two fight scenes I'm going at. I mean, and it was funny to us. Even though, you know, you never know, man. They could have just pulled out. They were young Hispanic guys. They're probably late teens, early 20s. So we're sitting, normally you would have been, and a lot of people in the audience, they were afraid. But my friend Wayne and I weren't. You know, if things got out of hand, we win. So what happens? It's the end of, they turn up the lights, they escort the guys out or something. At the end of the movie, you have employees of the movie theater are standing there handing out free passes, okay? When we come back, I'll tell you what happened the next time I went back to the same theater. And it's in a nice mall theater called Metro Center. Harkins Theater, man. It's a big, you know, to-do. Multi, you know, screen theater. We come back, and I'll tell you what happened that time. Stay right there.
There are those that just want to be left alone. And those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
You can keep breathing in and out. That's my that's my advocacy. Keep breathing in and out. We need to survive this thing. There's lots of ways to do that. And I'll tell you, I'm just going to share some of my life with you here recently and what we're doing today so that you can know that. I'm working on it. I wanted to finish a story about, you know, what happened. A friend of mine and I, we went to a movie. I remember as when Mission Impossible 2, Tom Cruise doing blah, blah, blah. It was a motorcycle thing, and I didn't really like that episode. But 3, totally redeemed himself. But in the second one, there's a fight breaks out in the movie theater. A couple of young Hispanic guys going at it, and there's a girl involved, of course. So they're going at it, and they're kind of waning a little bit. Ooh, fight scene on the screen's got my attention again. I'm going back and forth and so on, and we could take that, you know, kind of posture. We were like, yeah, we're all good, because my friend and I were both armed. So we're just like, you know, we know we're, and a lot of the people, and it wasn't really crowded. It was an afternoon thing. There were probably a total maybe 50 people in the whole theater, but, you know, people were concerned. You know, they, you know, some people were leaving, going out, they're going to get management, they're starting, you know, whatever. As we're leaving, they, oh, ever so sorry for that happening. Here's a free pass. Please come back. Please come back. Please come back. And, and you know, I'm sure a lot of people going, yeah, you know, I'm not sure, because it was Metro Center at one time. And I remember it was in the late 70s. It was the largest mall in the world, certainly in the United States. And it was a big deal. And it had a glass elevator. Oh, we'd go up and down 3 floors doing JCPenney glass elevator, man. No, I had to do it. Well, this, as time went on and demographics change and the valley moves and it grows and it's 2-3 times the size from then, and all of a sudden this mall becomes more Hispanic. Okay. So it's starting to be seen, you know, you got the, you know, the resident white people, they're going, I'm not sure. I'm going, you know, and I just like, I don't care. You know, it's it just didn't bother us, but felt better having a firearm, you know, then I'll go brave it. Okay. I'll go to the ghetto. Well, it's not that bad, but it is definitely different. Okay, you are definitely getting, well, of course, now they're running everybody off. Now there's nobody there, but it's probably vacant. But so what happens is they give us the tickets to come back. Again, we're with some other friends, a couple that we've known for decades, you know, some of our best friends, my wife and Scott and his wife. We go in, Kim, and we go in. We say we're going to go to the movies, so we go there, and I go, you know, I'm going to take my firearm. We went a little bit early. You know, we were there 10 minutes early or something, so I got time to play. They knew this story, what had happened before. Well, I got my, you know, movie ticket. I'm going to get my free movie ticket, right? So I have a sidearm. I go and I'm willing to check the firearm. Is there some place I can check? You guys want me to check, you know, but I'm not going to say anything because I don't want to mess with my firearm. But they have, it's night, so they, of course they have a policeman out there. Well, now you can't hardly go to a movie theater on the weekend without having some rent-a-cop around somewhere. Okay, fine. You know, if they want to do that privately and so on, that's fine. Until, that's a little side here, they start having regulations in certain areas of town when you have congregations of certain numbers of people, or they start requiring that you have rent-a-cops. You know, it's like if you're doing construction, you got to have a cop. He makes some extra money overtime, whatever. You know, here's the guy. You got to have an officer. Having an event? Oh, I'm sorry. You want to get your event approved for your little kegger you want to have, whatever, or you have a party here or a birthday party at the park or whatever, certain place, certain times of day, certain number of people, you got to have rent-a-cop, okay? So I can see this is going, you know, I'm, you know, this whole police state mentality, I've been sensitive to it. It's been happening over a long, you want to do that. You want to hire somebody. You want to get somebody to train. That's one thing. But you're going to put it in legislation, seriously, to use public, fine. All right. I can, you know, what, you think it's going to get less? Of course it's going to get more. It's going to keep getting more. Oh, and you could save the money if you bought the electronics or allow us to put in the camera, the surveillance that will be watched by blah, 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 blah. I mean, you know, you can just see where this is going. So I'm just, and all you got to do is look at trends. I mean, it's not that hard. You know, you conspiracist. I'm like, really? Well, I'll just wait 5 years and then we'll see who's the idiot. Okay. It's rarely us. So I go there, and there's a officer, and he sees me. I keep it out in the open. I got my 9mm in a nice Galco, you know, tan leather looking holster, you know, and my 9mm breath. All right, there I am. And he goes, "Oh, you can't put that. You can't bring that here. You got to put it in your car." I go, "Well, is there somewhere I could check it?" The manager, I'd be more than happy to do what they say, but I tell you, you know, this ticket. Let me tell you what happened last time I was here. And I go, "I just want to know, are you here? Are you going to protect me now? Are you here to protect me? I just want to make sure you're here to protect me." And I go, the manager, the thing comes up and everything. Nice cover. I mean, it lasted all 30 seconds. I didn't make a big giant deal out of it, but I wanted to make a point. And I'm going, "Look, nobody was here to protect me last time, okay? You know, nobody was here in the afternoon. You had, you know, a little gang outing going on over here. You had nobody that was going to take care of me. All I get is a free ticket." And I'm like, "You know what? I'll take care of myself. I'm good. You know, but you're taking my means to take care of myself away from me. So is he my bodyguard now? I mean, is somebody good? I just want to know. Where's the responsibility here?" "Well, no, we can't have you policy." I go, "Oh, that's cool. You know, I just want to make sure we're clear on this." And I go and I put the gun back and we went to the movie. Now, of course, I could have just carried concealed, you know, and nobody known any different. But the thing is that I want to make that point for this reason. Back in 1994, when we first started doing the concealed carry initiative here, where SAFE came from, Second Amendment is for everyone, and we, you know, did this pact for it, and we're making a big deal out of it, and we're kind of resurrecting that when the NRA went weenie on the First Amendment with the Disclosure Act. You know, we'll let you take away everybody else's First Amendment rights as long as we get a waiver. You know, be able to communicate with voters so we can get them to vote for our Republican congressmen incumbents that we want that are scumbags. Like, they're talking about they may even endorse Harry Reid. Are you kidding me? I'm like, "Oh, make my day." Oh, that. Anyway, so at the time, they had passed the concealed carry permit system, all right, because of the threat of the initiative and so on. All right, fine, just like with the camera fraud deal. We make a big, giant deal out of that. Oh, it wouldn't be prudent. We're going to take this away. The slaves are in an uprising. You know, this is the dang. So that went away. Even though they didn't get enough signatures for the initiative, they never tell them how many they got anyway. So they still got over 100-something thousand. I mean, it was definitely popular, and it was all volunteer, and they weren't paying for it. So, you know, it's they make it hard, you know, unless you just, you know, shell out the bucks. But so that goes away. Well, of course, they'll do some other stupid thing later. You know, here it comes. But, you know, they'll pull back if you put enough pressure on. What happened was a bunch of legislators, they get their concealed carry. They're all proud about it. "Yeah, yeehaw, I got my gun and the state approved and I can stomp around, do whatever I want." We made a big deal out of it because we're consistent on freedom. Libertarians are just, and I'll tell you why. What happens is if you have private property, okay, that is yours. You can dispose of it, use it any way you, and certainly in a libertarian world, you can set whatever conditions you can't come on my property unless you're naked and good looking, okay? And got, you know, gold grill teeth with a gun. I mean, whatever, you can set whatever criteria you want as far as I'm concerned. You might not have a lot of people going, but I mean, you know, you can, if that's what you want to do, if you're Hugh Hefner and you say only babes need cross my threshold, well, you know, that's your deal, all right? So what they were doing is a legislator, he was president of the Senate, I don't know if he was at that time, but his name was John Green. Later he'd run for attorney general. And these guys, you don't want these guys. Not, I mean, it's just stinking thinking. He's carrying his firearm concealed. He has his permit and everything. Well, he's all incensed because somebody saw it. He was in a mall, and at the front door of the mall it said no firearms allowed. Okay, well, it's a, you know, it's a private business. You know, they say this is our mall. You go, now they start to make the argument, no, it's not a private business. It's a town square. Maybe the individual shops are, you know, individually owned, but, you know, the mall itself, it's kind of like the public square, especially when you're hot out in the sun in the summer in Arizona. So we're saying that we confiscated your mall and it's now public because we want to. Well, who comes to their defense? The libertarians. We're going, look, it's private property. They can ban guns all they want. You know, it's theirs. They can do whatever they want. Well, you're not really Second Amendment. No, we're freedom. Get it through your freaking head. Because what they were saying is that we got a state permit that gave us the right, or whatever they want to call it, the privilege or something, the license, the permit, the permission from the man to carry concealed and not be in violation of the law. Okay? You're not in violation of a gun law. That they want to, you offer to have them check it. Like you go to a government building, you say, look, either you're checking it or you're letting me come in. Well, that was the law. That's always been the law. But they just never follow it. So later they pass the law saying you got to obey the law. And I'm just like, I'm so done with government. Anyway, we can make good examples out of them. So these legislators go and they say, we need to have a law that makes these businesses allow us to bring our guns into their business. Because they're not letting us. Really? Sound freedom-oriented to you? Oh, you want to know what happens on that? We'll keep finishing on that line. You stay right there. We'll be back in just a little bit.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
Oh, the Led Zeppelin never hurt anybody. Yeah, we let a little bit of that, let it go. You know, here on Declare Your Independence, we got lots and lots and lots and lots of stories, and we're creating more stories. You know, I mean, that's, you know, stories are better than, I don't know, shooting. Have a good story. Well, one of the stories is just the history of gun legislation and activism and how it's played in the media and how they, you know, twist and use and yaddy, 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 yaddy. It's never really what they say it is, okay? So here in Arizona, now you have them, gun issues, big deal, 1994. None of the gun shops would allow the petition to be at their shop. You know, just allow unrestricted concealed carry, the law that goes into effect the 26th or 9th, it's a, you know, towards the end of this month. It's already been passed, done, signed, away we go. There's a lot of people. Now you have a bunch of people out of work, all these gun trainers for getting their CCWs and so on. Of course, they, you know, all competing against each other. But, you know, so now they're like, what do we do? Well, so they're I know what's going to happen. They're going to come together. They're going to start, you know, they'll put up signs and they'll advocate for, you know, this legislator over that one, and we need to, oh, Arizona's a freedom, come buy our stuff, move here and shoot and learn, and it's all good, okay? But I know what's going to happen. As they come together and they build, it's going to eventually turn into, oh, and it's all Democrats' fault, vote Republican, and this guy's our favorite congressman because he's going to give us whatever. Because I remember right after the 94 election, the crime bill and everything, the NRA, John Kyle votes for the crime bill as a congressman, runs for U.S. Senate, wins with the endorsement of the NRA after he voted for the crime bill, and they gave him an A-plus rating because they're for Republicans. It has nothing to do with gun rights. That's just their excuse. You know, they're thinking of endorsing Harry Reid in Nevada, the big gun grabber there ever was, against a Ron Paul Republican. You know, at least that's what they say. You know, I mean, just, you know, not as communist as him. Let's put it that way. So I'm just going, oh, please, you know, so here comes SAFE. I know what, here comes SAFE again. Second Amendment's friendly. We're gonna do it what? At a default. What do we have to do? Just not be compromisers? Do we got to, like, market against them? Do we got to have, like, bigger signs and cooler logo? Or, you know what? We got to have Charlton Heston out there from my cold dead fingers as he's holding up a flintlock? I mean, you know, is this where we got to go? I mean, is it that hard? I mean, heck, you know, in the mid-90s, we're raffling off AR-15s on the front steps of the post office on April 15th as people are paying their taxes. And who's pulling the winning thing? 1994. Who's pulling April 94, April 15th, 1994? Who's pulling out the winning lottery tickets? Who is that? Sheriff Richard Mack from Graham County in southeastern Arizona. Who's the other person pulled out, you know, second place? You know, city councilwoman from Phoenix, Frances Barwood. Who was the third person? You know, Libertarian Party, Second Amendment Caucus guy, later became state chair, Mike Duggar. You know, we've been doing this a long time, long time, long time, long time. We'd have concealed carry rigs that we'd raffle off. We had a 50 caliber that we raffled off. We had reach out and touch someone, a rifle raffle, you know, raffle off. And we did hunting rifles, and we had a tactical sniper rifle, a Savage sniper rifle, and I think it was in 308. We had a hunting rifle in 308, and we had a cheaper version. And you know what the logo was? It was Bambi in crosshairs wearing a UN helmet. I mean, you know, if you're not having fun, you're doing it wrong. So what was it? They think we're going to outdo? No, we're just making a point and having fun. So this is, you know, the kind of role that we take in this thing. And the NRA and all these other people, it's all pretend. They want to have gun control stuff all around them so it justifies their existence. They're not about their freedom. You know what they did? In 95, right after 94, they did all this A-plus rating for people that voted for crime bills, and we went all crazy. John Kyle, K-Y-L, all right? Now he's a U.S. senator from Arizona. We had signs all over the place. Zeke Kyle! With little swastikas and dripping blood and everything. Zeke Kyle! Zeke Kyle! We faxed stuff all over the country and into Washington. We're just like, man, oh, heck no, we're not going to let him get away with that unscathed. And then we brought it back a little bit, you know, this election cycle. Because we can. Well, at the time, the next year, they had the city council race and mayor. So it's four city councilmen and mayor for Phoenix. The NRA, we had a full slate of libertarians. The NRA came out and said, good guys, too. They said, while the libertarians are very good on Second Amendment issue, we can't agree or endorse their social stances. So we're giving them an L rating. And then liberals, you know, libertarian, whatever. So we're like, cool. So from then on, we would never take anything other than an L rating. We go, what, A plus? We had shirts that were done up when the NRA came for their national convention in downtown Phoenix in the late 90s. And we had the shirt that says, I am the NRA and I am ashamed. And it said, John Kyle, A plus. Sarah Brady, A plus. Broccoli, A plus. Okay, so we're just going, you know, your A plus don't mean squat to us. We want our L rating. Now, remember, this was back when Wayne LaPierre said, you know, jackbooted thug, and it made a big, giant stink. Ooh, of course it did. They wanted it to. You know, Clinton and Bush, they go, oh, we're bailing out. We're not going to be NRA anymore. To give the impression that they were all hardcore now and so on. Nothing could be further from it. It was engineered. It was all crap, and we knew it. Jackbooted thug. Oh, yeah, we're the militia types now. Ooh, we're hardcore. No, they weren't. No, they weren't. It's a game they play. They don't play in Arizona much. NRA doesn't come here. I'll tell you another little story. I'll get to the mall thing. I ain't done with that. And I didn't forget. I got it written down right here. But I need you to know that the NRA wants to have gun control legislation to give them something to rally against. In fact, we hammered on them so much for doing that in Arizona, they didn't play in Arizona anymore. There was a group called Williams and McSomething, whatever. It's a lobbying group here. And they go to the NRA, and we need to, you know, you need to hire us to be your lobby. They go, we don't mess with Arizona. You know, we don't worry about Arizona. We don't come out good in Arizona. We don't play Arizona. Oh, really? Yeah, you do. You're going to need to. You know what they did? The lobby firm, you know, went on the cheap and worked for the guy that owned Monster.com. Okay? He's like a handgun control, you know, Sarah Brady lover guy. All right? So Monster.com owner, he comes in. Oh, we need handgun control. We need this kind of control. This very lobbying firm that was offering their services to the NRA went and got, and they needed it to go through a committee. They don't care if it gets passed. They know it's not going to get passed in Arizona, but they need it to get voted on and go through one committee. And they tell all the legislators, look, we don't care. It could die after this. We just want it to get voted and pass one committee. And it'll come into the blah, blah, blah committee and the, you know, Ways and Means Committee or the Judicial Committee or the Rules Committee or this Appropriations Committee or Subcommittee. All right. So as long as they get, they'll trade off whatever to get just to get it through one committee, make a big deal out of it. See, you need us. How do I know this? Because they told me, this firm, they wanted us when we were opposing the football stadium that was going to Mesa and then go to Glendale, and they were trying to get us to help them. Yo, they'll help us get it away from them. They won't go in Glendale thinking I even give a crap where it goes. And, you know, because what they had is they had the city of Tempe was paying them to get it to go in the Tempe. And they're talking to us, and they're telling us how great and wonderful they are in their big downtown. They get an ex-legislator that I knew that worked on Second Amendment stuff before, named Scott Bonesgard. He comes in, and he'll say, oh, come on, Ernie, you got to meet with him. We'll get you to meet with Ernie. We get to meet, you know, guy and get you a meeting with us. Go down and meet with him. So I go down there, and I go there, you know, and they're the big offices with the big mahogany table and, like, no papers on anything. All they got is just big offices and big mahogany tables. And it's probably 15 different lobbyists, you know, that kind of lease the same thing so they can show everybody their big mahogany table or something. It's all facade. go in there, and they tell me this NRA story just to tell me how savvy they are and how cool they are. They didn't know who I was. They're just trying to impress me. And I'm like, yep, that's how it works. That's how it works, you slow. So you can see, I you're still voting. Ugh. So the legislators that get the concealed carry thing, they're going to businesses and malls and so on. And by then, you know, I own a restaurant. And I'm like, you know, hey, it's mine. Now I can do whatever I want. I can say, you know, I don't want you to hear. You go away. I reserve the right to refuse, you know, service to any communist, you know, or women that, you know, don't have big hairdos. All right. Whatever. So they go into these places, says you can't carry a firearm. They go, well, I just passed a law, says I can. Well, you're not guilty of a firearm violation, but you are guilty of trespassing. So, yeah, okay, you're not charged with a firearm violation. You offered to let them check it. They don't want to check it, so they don't charge you with that. They charge you with trespassing. You're on somebody's private property against their will. Go away. So they want to pass a law saying that businesses must allow concealed carry guys to carry it. Must allow them to go in the restaurants. Must, you know, whether they have alcohol and blah, 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 blah. This goes on right now. Where are the libertarians? We were out in front of the mall with signs, said, you know, gun owners, shop Christown Mall, which is now Spectrum Mall, which is, you know, I don't know, it's like 5 miles away from that one. You know, they just redid it. It used to be called Christown, and now it's at the end of the light rail and all that kind of stuff, and it's a nice mall, and it's where, you know, they got the Walmart there and the Sam or Costco, and they got, you know, whatever, okay, JCPenney and so on. So this big mall, we're like, just go over there. They say you can walk around with your gun, or they'll check it for you. You know, you don't got to violate their property rights. Just go shopping over there. Let's go shop over there. Oh, the gun community got all up in our faces. You damn libertarians. I thought you were pro-gun. No, we're pro-freedom, you stupid. How many times? You know, every time you want us to slap you upside the head with it, you just bring it on, man. Have absolutely no problem doing it. You know, and be happy to with a grin. There's more to that. I'll finish that story when we come back here and declare your independence with me, Ernest Hancock. See, you learned something. We'll be right back.